Table Talk is not your typical D&D TTRPG podcast. We are not here to run you through our whole campaign.
We're here to talk about everything else in the space of Table Talk.
I'm your host, Alejandra Wilhelm.
And I'm also your host, Mariah Gresham.
And we're your tabletop roleplay girlies.
That the guest referred to as Kurt, with he, him pronouns, is currently known as Daisy and goes by she, her. Our editor did her best to take out as much as possible while having the episode still make sense. Now, thank you so much for your understanding, and let us get on with the episode.
Alrighty, and we are live with another episode of Table Talk. Thank you again so much for joining us for another episode. And we have a really great guest episode that is actually part of the charity drive we did in January for Doctors Without Borders. Thank you to our guests for donating, for being a guest on our episode. Please give us a quick little intro and a rundown about what y'all do and where people can find you.
You want to go first?
No, you go first. Nobody knows who I am. It doesn't matter.
The panic.
Yeah, like, no. I knew. I mean, people want to know you. No one cares about who I am.
Well, hi, everyone. I'm Mr. Kurt Wise, by all places that you probably know me on the internet by. I make Dungeons & Dragons and TTRPG sketch videos, as well as recently segued into the TTRPG writing game with a new system that Josh created and I wrote into a manual called the Narrative Universe, which we are that's good for an intro. We'll talk a lot about it later on.
My name is Josh Orsak. I run the Orsak Narrative Universe, which is a pro gaming system mostly focused on text games. You can find me Orsak Narrative Universe on TikTok, on YouTube, on Twitch. Biggest thing is our Discord. That's where, like, the center of what I do, and it's really easy. It's all your normal Discord invite, and then Orsak Narrative Universe is one word. And I invented my own TTRPG system with a group of friends 28 years ago. I swore I would never write it down. It was just something that I did, and then I became a pro GM about 10 years ago. And then Kurt was like, I really like your system, kind of wrote it down. I was like, yes, you can. And so together, you know, I provided him the information, and he wrote an amazing source book. So now the you can run your own Narrative Universe games. Using
that
the
is so
material.
Cool. So, yeah. Awesome. Okay. Well, tell me a little bit about your system then. Like, how, give me the rundown.
Yes. Crash course.
You go first.
Okay. So, the system is, very narrative focused, as the name might imply. We really encourage collaboration amongst every player at the table, not just the narrator, as we call the game master, the person running the game. Not just the narrator sort of deciding what the story is or where things are going, but really everyone has input in the story, input in the characters. It's very easy to learn. It's very easy to run as the narrator. It's a system that's set up that you can prep as much as you want to, but there's really no prep that is necessary because a lot of the decisions come down to a unique mechanic that's in the system called fate roll. We sort of separate out the success of characters' actions versus whether that is a good or a bad thing in the narrative. So whenever a character takes an action or does something, normally they'll make a skill check first to determine whether they're capable of doing whatever they're trying to do. And then they'll make a fate roll. And the higher the fate roll is determines the better the success of that action in the party. So you can succeed and that end up having some really bad consequences for the story, or you can fail forward towards great success. And it's something that I have really found a lot of joy of almost immediately when I joined the Orsak Narrative Universe that Josh runs as a player and then running games in it. And almost as soon as I started, I was like, we gotta write this down. This is great.
I love that. That sounds super interesting. No, yeah, I was just we're both narrative and role play heavy hoes in this house, as is very prevalent across our episodes. So, like, I love the idea of failing forwards. I love the idea of succeeding, but then that having consequences that you didn't necessarily think would happen. So I love that element of play there.
Yeah, when me and my friends, you know, we were around. I'm old, So we were a second edition, and we wanted to like simplify it. So we did. I actually got a book called Tabletop Role Playing Games for Dummies, and he had this this exercise in this book that I will never forget. And when people tell me, like, want to develop their own system, or even if they want to GM for the first time and they want some advice, is the advice I always give them. Now, this is just like something you read. It was very simple, but it changed my life. Like, literally changed the way I think about this whole process. He said, take two people, and one or two extra people, one person who's telling the story. Tell a story. Don't have any other mechanics other than 100-sided dice. And every time you come to a problem, every time you come to a conflict, just roll 100-sided dice against each other. And that's it. That's all. And he goes, and watch how dynamic a game you can have doing that simple thing. Whoever gets higher wins. That's the only rule there is. Everything else is just a story. Watch how complex and how intricate a story you can tell doing that. And he said, and then go back to whatever type of TTRPG you're running, and then ask yourself, what do I really need to run a game? And doing that, like thinking about that at the table, one of the things we started doing is rolling 100-sided dice all the time to help decide what would happen. And even to if somebody wanted to do something that was really complicated, wasn't covered in the rule. You know, I want to jump on the back of this cart. I want to grab the guy, the pitchfork. I want to, you know, like a series of actions that the individual rules didn't really like cover. There's no skill that covers that. What does that mean, and how do you do that? So we would, based on the stats, I would give them a bonus or a detriment, and we'd roll against each other, and we'd figure out how to do that. I mean, a really easy mechanic to do really complex things. Chase mechanics, you know, I've had people tell me that, and I don't know, but like in 5e, the chase mechanics aren't great. So you can't like run against each other very effectively. I just on the fly, you think about what skills a person have, what their dexterity is. You can do roll 100-sided roll against. And we have really, really cool, like chase scenes in the games all the time. It's a really cool part of the ONU and the narrative universe. And it came because we kind of developed that mechanic.
I love that. So you're talking about like actual chase scenes and how to run that, right? Yeah,
right. Okay. Or whatever you had come up with. If you're running a narrative universe game and you come to a point, you're like, okay, like, and somebody comes up with something wild and you want that action to take place in the game, you don't have the exact rules in front of you, because, you know, any set of rules can only cover so much. It's very easy with the fate roll system to make up what that's going to look like in your head. You go, okay, so this person's got acrobatics and high dexterity. I'm going to have them roll 100-sided. I'm going to give them a plus 20 on the roll. I'm going to see what happens. And then I'm going to maybe make a judgment on how successful the act was. It becomes a very malleable kind of, and very, it's a simple mechanic that's very malleable and allows you to do things narratively in a game that if you're sticking slavishly to a set of rules, you might not even have the option to do, because there is no mechanic in whatever system you're using to cover whatever action the person is describing.
I love that. We just had the Storyteller Squad on, and I was talking with their GM, Natalie, and because they run Monster of the Week and like a lot of Power of the Apocalypse systems. And so it was interesting to me when she described like, when you decide to make them roll for things, and how there's certain points where it's in normal D&D, you know, you'll ask for a skill check and maybe you as the DM are like, shit, I wish they had succeeded, because mm-hmm. I want to narratively give them more in that moment. And I love the idea of changing that kind of mentality with a different system that kind of allows you a little more narrative freedom. And then I also was like asking, I was like, you know, how do you still maintain a level of like reward in that sense of whenever they do get like a nat 20 or something, and feeling that reward of like, oh, I've failed a couple checks back, and like now I've got my 20 and I'm getting all this good info because of it. And I'm like, how do you still have that element mm-hmm. there when you're playing more narrative, like heavy ones? And it's like, you still will ask, and it's like, yeah, the roles are less frequent, but it's like when they are asked of you, like, you're like, oh shit, I gotta sit up in my chair and I gotta go, this is not the dice I'm gonna use for this shit. I gotta go find my good one.
Please don't hoe me right now.
Yeah, as opposed to just like always rolling like perception checks and mm-hmm. and, you know, trying to always be on the lookout and always trying to see when you're gonna get that next good roll. So they're less frequent, but they're more impactful. And it's like, okay, this one counts and I really need it to succeed.
Yeah. And I do a similar thing in my games that I run,
because I like, there's definitely a place for making rolls, but same, I like it to be moments of stakes. Also because that just keeps the story moving, right? And so you're not like stopping every 2 seconds, like you're going through rooms, like make a perception check and a set of investigation checks in this room. Make an investigation check for the table. Make an investigation check for slidey bits under the bed. Like, it gets just like where it's a little too nitty gritty and bogged down for me and like the pacing and like just my preference for running. So it's like, I like to save them for the good things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there will be so many moments where I'm like, I'm playing normal D&D or I'm GMing and like, I have them roll for something and they don't get what I want. I'm like, take advantage because I fucking said you can have advantage and I need you to roll better. Pick a different die. I need you to do this better.
I do the same thing because I'll be like, yeah, but you actually have your glasses on right now, so you get advantage on that perception check.
Whatever lawyer marketing bullshit I need to pull at the table to make it, to justify that you have advantage.
You just went to the fantasy optometrist. You got that crisp, fresh prescription. You're good.
Yeah.
And that was something I also had like a little trouble with, like you said, rolling less. When I'm running games that are narrative, I sit there a lot of times and I'm like, should I be doing more right now? Am I doing enough for all this? And there's that weird, like, you have to kind of get used to just allowing the players to take a lot more agency in the story, and get used to not asking for those roles all the time. And actually something else I heard you touch on, like the disappointment of them not finding something that you planned for. What I found is a lot of times if since I've really stopped preparing so much for the games that I'm running, I'll really leave it up to the player's actions to determine a lot of like almost like Schrodinger's locked door. Like can I roll an investigation check? Sure. I succeeded. Cool. There's a locked door in the room. You found a locked door. I didn't know it was there either, but now there is.
We're gonna find out together.
And now the fate roll can determine what they find within it, right? Is it good information that'll help them save the kingdom, or is it bad information that like tells them one of their trusted allies is betraying them? Like, there's a lot of really cool nuances that you can get and a lot of freedom that you can have as the narrator to enjoy the story as it's unfolding rather than feel like you have to worry about how the story is going compared to something that you've imagined that it was going beforehand.
Gotcha. Yeah. So the narrative system is truly just like, I've sat down at this table with zero prep and we're just going to see where the dice take us kind of vibe.
It's not on the fly. I'm just having to remember everything that's happened in all the games. And
you just have like a mind palace of everything that's happened in the past 20 years.
I have an eidetic memory. So like,
literally at mind palace. Yeah.
I have, and every game is affecting every other game. In a variety of ways. And players love it. I mean, they love affecting everybody else's game.
Yeah.
They love that too. Every time you encounter something in my game, you have a sense of it, even without me telling you, you have a sense of its history. You have a sense that this DM did not come up with this nonsense. Like, this is something that had that evolved. You can feel it instantly. And also players want to have that same impact. What I was going to say about what you said earlier, though, because I wanted to address it, was really, really good, is that you want to have the freedom to give people the opportunities that you think they should have. At the same time, there is something story-wise that is given in bad dice rolls, right? We have all had opportunity where something not going the way we wanted to opened up possibilities that we had never considered. The cool thing about the fate roll is that it allows you to do that, but then also make the situation more complex. So I'm like, I want this person to get it. So I roll that fate roll. I give it to them, but then there's this other maybe negative consequence. I still have the dice limiting my freedom, which I think is an important part of the creative process of TTRPGs. I'm a strong believer that TTRPGs are an art form. I think they're an art form that, even though it's been a game for 50 years, it's only being discovered as an art form now. And that's why there's so much energy around it. I don't think we've framed it that way as much as we should have, which is that it's being discovered as an art form. And that dice limiting effect is important. You know, one other thing I wanted to say real quick is that when someone rolls a 95 or 100 at a table on a fate roll and they see it and they know that their action had that kind of success, it's like rolling a 20, but take it but to on infinity. Steroids. People yeah. will lose their minds over a 95 in the way they won't even over a quit 20, even though the odds are exactly the same. That's a little mm-hmm. bit of like the just human psychology. And if they roll a 99 or 100, it's over. You will never see a table explode like you will when they take their action, they crit their roll, and then that roll rolls a 98, a 99, or 100. It's just magic. So that kind of moment that you have at the table, you can have with the system that as it exists. Well,
that is really cool. Because I've had that after that conversation with Natalie, and as we're talking now, I had that moment of yes, things that are more narrative driven, and I have that freedom to give as freely as I would want. But then, I agree that it is an art form, and there, as much as I love the freedom of narrative, there still needs to be something limiting you, something holding for that sure. back, because there's certain things that need to feel earned or yeah. rewarded at the table. Or when you have those crits and you're now I as a GM have to factor in things that I didn't even think were possible mm-hmm. are now having to occur, and how that's going to dramatically shift everything.
Yeah.
And having those odds still be at play, I think is really key to having those really impactful moments where everybody's fucking running around the table like it's the goddamn Super Bowl because you just rolled that crazy crit. Seeing all the effects of that happen.
And those stakes in those moments, they can't be arbitrary. They have to feel randomly derived. Because it's because if it's not, and it was just the DM making a call of this happens or this doesn't, that gets so complicated so quickly. And so it has to be where even the DM can be didn't plan for that, but here we are. Everybody has to have that level of playing field and that bit of humbling from whatever the dice decide to do in the moment.
I agree. It can't all be the DM's choice of yes or no when a player pitches something, because then at that point it's yes, there's elements of I justify it as a DM or you justify it as a player, but then somewhere in that, if we take the fate out of it, then you'll start getting I think not inherently, but resentment whenever yeah. there's things that you're I as a player thought that was justified and the DM has decided that's not a thing that's gonna happen. And hopefully everybody has cool heads about it, but sometimes I've had moments where I'm this was dumb that I wasn't allowed to do this, even if we're going with rules as written.
The classic animate dead, you're not being able to talk to a skeleton.
I wanted to light everything on fire because I was why the fuck do I have this spell if I cannot talk to this dead person? Then you told us we were coming to a graveyard to talk to look at the old party members of the BBEG, and you expected me as a bard not to have speak with dead?
Yeah.
And then you don't want me to speak with the dead guy.
Yeah. fully switched careers and became an attorney in that moment, because I spent most of my life planning to be an attorney, and I was words have meaning. And we don't get to change them for our own convenience.
Yeah.
And, I almost...
The DM's logic in that was that the body was so far decomposed that there was no, hung or, air passage to formulate words.
Yeah, but it's...
So then it was just, a nod or a shake of the head situation. It's not
speak with two-week-old corpse. It's speak with dead.
Yeah. I'm generally. I'm sorry, that I didn't realize my spell only applied to the freshly dead.
Right.
I know a lot of times when I hear about if you remove all the roles and you just remove all the roles, remove all the randomness, it just becomes improv, right? But even short, long form improv, there's still structure, there's still rules to the games that they are playing as a group. They're not just going out there and all right, let's tell a story now. I think I totally agree. The dice and rolling is such an essential part. It makes it a game. It makes it, I think, fun. For everyone.
Absolutely. What you were saying earlier about that, this is another just great thing about that mechanic, that fate roll mechanic, is that there's a lot of times when me and the player have some level of disagreement about what makes sense in a narrative, because, one of my philosophy professors used to say, it ain't obvious what's obvious. There is no greater disagreement you're going to have between any two group of people about than what's obvious, is that other rational human beings are going to see obviousness different. That comes up at the table all the time. So the cool thing about fate rolls is I give that responsibility to the dice. Now, when those kinds of narrative disagreements happen, I go, we're going to roll a fate roll. It goes your way, man. You get exactly what you want. It's not going to work out that way. Or we could wind up in the middle and try to find some middle ground. And that also frees me up of that same responsibility, because it ain't about me. It's about the different players and what they put into the game.
Yeah. That you're like, I'm not going to let you Looney Tunes your way through this. Yeah. This hard earned thing.
And also, like, yes, it's crazy, but like, I didn't do this to you. Like, Brad in Cincinnati this to you.
Brad in Cincinnati.
Like, take it up with him.
That is exactly how the conversation goes.
Send a strongly worded letter to Brad and let me know how that goes for you.
Someone, because of this, created a skill in the game called strongly worded letter. Merchants in the game get a skill called strongly worded letter, where you actually can write a strongly worded letter to different characters in the game.
That's hilarious.
As per my previous missive, go fuck yourself.
Yeah. That's right. And that is the answer they often get back.
Incredible. You know incredible. Man. No, I love that. And yeah, like I oftentimes have that happen at the table, because like my girls are hustlers, and so too am I. Like, I cannot blame them when they're like, can I have advantage because my parents are dead? Like, sure, bud. But it is something that I've learned now as like a relatively new GM, because I'm coming up on like, I'm just past my first year GMing, and having that tendency to be like, I'm not going to say no, but this is a buck wild thing you've asked of me.
Yeah.
And I'll leave it to chance. If you roll a 20, yeah, fuck it. I guess we're doing this. But, and they're like, I'll take that fucking odds. I don't care. And it's nice because, yeah, it removes the blame on you, puts it on the dice, puts it on fate. And yeah, fuck, if you rolled a 20, I said what I said, I guess we're out here now.
Yeah.
And like, we're all in this boat together. And if you get bad about it, that was your fault. You asked.
You did this to us. Yeah.
But it's a time. But it is a skill that you have to learn. And weirdly enough, in a game with like so many rules, I feel like it's something that's been echoing a lot with a lot of our past guests, is like being a good GM is like knowing how to like release control and give that over to the players. And you're more of the facilitator of the world and the story, and you have to adapt. Like, you can plan and prep all you want, but there will always be moments where they're going to throw some shit at you that you're just like, well, I didn't plan for this, but I guess now there's like 20 NPCs that are now existing that I had no idea existed. And now I have to recalculate my entire life around this.
Yeah, like you're more of a steward of the world and the environment. And you have no control over the player characters and what they're doing. But it's like your job as the person running the game is to figure out how what they run up against then affects them. Mm-hmm. And like the rest of it is your domain, where I feel like a lot of times, when you're first getting into DMing, or like, it's so easy to be like, oh my God, I have to know the plot and I have to know what's going to happen. And like, you really don't, because you're going to have to throw out half of it.
Yeah.
It's like, just sit down.
It's also, you don't know what you don't know. And there's no point in getting mad at things not going your way, because most of the time, that weird segue that you just veered off into is going to become probably one of the most significant moments in your campaign.
Yep.
And like, we wouldn't have gotten there if you didn't allow them that freedom.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. I totally agree. I know one of that sort of mentality of being a steward of the world, which I love that phrasing. What we really try to drive home in the manual when we're talking to narrators about running their games. And I think is the term narrator, we talked about, Josh and I, and chose it very, very specifically. Because, you know, it's the characters, it's the players at the table, the characters that are choosing the actions, that are driving the narrative forward. Sort of your job just to narrate the actions, narrate those consequences of whatever happens. And we put a lot of emphasis in like, if you're going to try to prep for a game, put a lot of your focus into your world building. add know like where the story hooks are that characters might be able to get some cool information. Know like what weird shops and NPCs are around town that they can interact with. Know like what's going on in the world at large, because that information is what's going to be more useful to you in the moment when something doesn't go as expected than writing out a exact plot like you have a lot of times in modules and other like pre-written things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny because we just had that same thought with our previous guest today, Luke from Arcane Keepers, of that like the best advice I can give a DM is that know your world, know your NPCs, know the shit that's going on in the background and what like these NPCs are doing outside of these characters. So that when your players do decide, like, I know you said we were going to go to this particular dungeon, but I actually wanted to go talk to the fucking queen and about some random ass thing that I thought of before this session that I didn't tell you about. And you're like, cool. It behooves you to know exactly what the fuck the queen has been up to.
Yeah.
In that time frame. So it's like, yeah, I know what the world is happening, how it's evolving, so that when they do turn a corner that you weren't expecting, you have an easier time adapting, and that will be more of a benefit than exactly like you just said, writing down all the specific plot points of this particular adventure that you're planning on them going on.
It's a collaborative art form. It's a collaborative art form. That's what it is. You are not creating something on your own that other people are walking through. You're creating with your players. Once you open yourself up to that collaborative nature of the art form, a lot of that stuff, like that's a mindset you have to have as you approach it. It's not writing a book. It's not creating a movie, not writing a play. It is a collaborative act. And then recently, you know, there's a woman who came into our community and she started playing. Her name was Laura and Laura Reams. And she's incredible. Like playing with her made every game she was in elevated. Never realized just how far on a professional level a player could take that, because having us together when we're able to bounce off of each other like that brings these other new players, and then they learn how to do that more effectively, and it's the best gaming experience I've ever had at a table.
And it's like you're having a sentient DMPC.
That's right. That's exactly what it's like. Except she loves to play. Like she doesn't get a ton of like back information from me or anything. She wants to be a player at the table. So it's even better, because she's going to drag me places I don't want to go. And she's really good at that. And she's really good at doing it effectively, knowing when it's time to like let me like set the scene and to push the direction of the DM. And also when you go, you know what? I don't care what you want, Joshua. We're going this way. And forcing me to go, and she's so good at it. Watching that elevate those experiences has opened up a whole new way, like thinking about like professional players. If you like, people are like they just want to be a part of it. Like they don't want it to stop because it's so good. I don't want it to stop. I love text games, but I'm a live game guy. Like we have a group of people flying into Houston. They bought me out for a weekend, and we're gonna be doing live games. And I love that. That's my bread and butter. You're never gonna be better than in person. But
you're in Houston?
Mm-hmm.
So am I.
That's fantastic. we're doing OU in Life Houston this coming weekend. There's That's a group awesome. Of people. We're going to, I don't know if you Rowdy's in the Clear Lake area. We're going to be hanging out.
Okay.
And then I have a studio right there, and we're going to be playing live. I was going to tell her, I was like, if y'all ever want to check it out, like with her, I asked her, because we're booked up, really. And I was like, could we squeeze the spot in? I would like to invite you to come to ONU and do a 2-week gold game. Please come by. It's Orsak. Come by the Discord.
We are text RP.
We are
monsters.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Ollie and I do a ton of that for like RP games and.
No, yeah. Because like we like I started my whole social media shit with like it was the Ocean's Pride stuff that was going on TikTok for a while, like during the pandemic and shit. And that became just a tag that was like, it was like a living world going on in Discord that was crossing over to TikTok and back and forth. So that story was being told across both TikTok and Discord. It was all going on simultaneously. A main group got selected to be like the raid party for that. And then people kind of watched as that was going on. And so that was all text-based. And then we streamed like the actual fight that was happening.
That's how we
did.
Yeah. And then I GM'd, like, we had another event that was like a ball heist. And so there were, really, we made channels with multiple rooms. And so each admin was basically the GM of a room. And I remember, like, my character, my person, is actively role-playing as I'm running this one section of the ball at the same time. And I was like, I'm spread like a spider on every limb.
Our friend Oak was living, so I think he was running the main ballroom, mm-hmm, where, like, everyone kind of, and we were breaking off.
Yeah.
And so he had so much going on.
He had so much going on. I was like a dining room or something. So, like, when the dinner happened and all the people flooded into my room, I was like, oh my God, like, there's just so, yeah, much going on. But it was so fun. And that was really like my first experience GMing something. And it was all text based and I loved it. But yeah, no, we're text roleplay whores, and we do a lot of OSRP constantly. Like, yeah, I have servers whole, just devoted to it.
I would love to GM you and have you play with Laura specifically, and I've already cleared it with her, so come, please.
Yes, I would
want to play with you bad like that. I was excited by the idea before. Now I'm going nuts. You're inside.
Like, now I'm
please,
fire.
Let's do this. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I used to be an actual monster.
How OP was, yeah.
Yeah, because, like, on the Ocean's Pride server, like, my character specifically, like, my personal TikTok, like, blew up with that tag and stuff. And so, like, people came to the server from my content. Mm-hmm. And so when they saw that they could actually, like, interact with me and stuff, yeah, as big Reyna. And there was definitely, like, an element of, like, people were becoming, like, fans of Reyna. And anytime I entered a room, it was like, I'm now running, like, 20 conversations at the same time because a lot of people want to interact with her. Mariah can attest because I was both an admin and actively playing on it all the time.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's playing a full on it fucking alone was job. A job.
Like, yeah. It's a job.
Yeah, like, mm-hmm, running all of those scenes for not just myself, but, like, other people and making sure that...
Yeah, like, we were scheduling things and, like, you must be like, okay, we're going to run this live at such and such time.
Yeah, and having to make sure that certain rooms are like, hey, we've prepared this scene and it's like people can watch because you have to make sure the scene plays out the way it needs to, and, like, you're coordinating and organizing. Yeah. Like, it's a whole ass job. So, like, I love that y'all have built something like that.
Yeah, and but the opportunity that represents is big too, because the truth is that all these people who are watching all this content, what they want to do is play. Mm-hmm. What they want to do is play. And they want to play with the people that they've come to respect.
No, I'll say the other side of that is when you're trying to schedule things. I know there's other things that come around, but, like, scheduling itself is ultimately, like, the villain of any DTRPG.
The curse
campaign.
Of adulthood, yeah.
Let alone trying to schedule people from perhaps different parts of the world and different time zones with different jobs and schedules. So doing it all text-based and, you know, like we do in check-in-based, everyone's expected to check in 2 to 3 times a day at least, just to help, you know, not leave the other people hanging. But it takes the scheduling aspect away from...
Which is nice.
Yeah, it's really nice. And it for me, you know, I have a lot of different things that I have to do, but it allows me to still be a pro GM with my schedule, and sort of I can get up in the morning, check in with people. At lunchtime, I can do a check-in. I can do it here or there when I have 10 or 15 minutes to update my games. So it's really a like Josh said, a great opportunity that you can take on as many games as you feel comfortable taking on or playing in. It's not like you have to dedicate hours and hours and hours of time every single day if you want to start getting into it.
Yeah, like a night every week or every other week or whatever where you're like, I'm rapidly running out of time to sit down and run live games.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, because right now I'm in your OSRP for your character, and then I'm in another, like, RP server that I have. And again, it, like you said, it's that element of it. I grew to my bandwidth with Ocean's Pride whenever I had the most available time with it for quarantine, because I wasn't working and, like, had all the time in the world, so I devoted myself to that. And then once I started working again, I was like, okay, clearly I don't have the time to be on here for... And it really was a, like, you had to respond because the chat would move so fast. And so I knew I didn't have bandwidth, but I took the people that I love to RP with, put them in a server,
And then we all enjoyed that element of like, we can carry out this RP over the course of a week or two, mm-hmm. responding when we can, when our time allows, when our jobs and real lives have given space for that. And having that convenience is really nice. So like having that at a professional degree where you can get paid for it, like sounds phenomenal.
The market's out there. The scope of the market that we've discovered is insane.
What if you need a little marketing consult?
I know. Yeah. So it was like Ollie and I, who both work in marketing, were just like the little ears pop up.
Let's talk. I want you to try the games and let's get the Discord because here's what concerns me, and something you said talking recently about professional GMing in a TikTok was incredible TikTok. You talked recently about also text games in light of people who have ADHD and how it can give you an opportunity to role play to play these games that you actually don't even have, maybe never the opportunity to, because you aren't wired to be able to sit at a table for hours on end. I worry about somebody who has money getting market share here. This is an opportunity for small business owners, for creators on TikTok who don't make money even as they create tons of content, to claim a space of making money in TTRPGs, and I mean we're doing it. I'm hopeful for more.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Do you mind me because again, am business bitch? Do you mind me asking like how much the prices are for these games and how much you're grossing right now doing it full time?
Sure. So I mean it's month to month. I can tell you that last year our gross was in six figures.
Nice.
We broke six figures in gross last year. A lot of that money's made in the summer. So the summer stuff just blows up. That's been true of my career ever since I started doing this. From May until September, I make a ton of money. October starts to slow down. November, December, January, February suck. March is a little bit better. April starts to transition in, and May is great. And that's just been I know that's how it's always going to go. It goes that way in the text game space as well.
It's all about finding the people that see the value in what you're providing and the people that don't. That's not your market. That's just not who you're serving. And that's okay. Right. And that's awesome. Like just from a business perspective, that's fucking awesome. And that's
It's a great place to be, except marketing is a pain in the ass.
It is. Yeah. It is. We recognize that and it sucks. Like it's hard enough. Like I was doing it for my company. And then having to do it for our own, like just recently, I went in like a whole slump and our social medias were basically dead because I hadn't made like backed up posts or anything for a while. And I was like killing myself over it. And I finally caught up again, which is nice. But it's
marketing authentically is always hard.
Yes. And not
and to super not salesy feel like a used car salesman.
Let me tell you something. I've learned from working with this guy. People say, you know, if he's not a creative genius, the word doesn't mean anything. That's a fact. I got to this guy and he said, I want to write a book. And I was like, can you do it in 6 months? And he goes, yes. And he comes up with this book that is absolutely beautiful. I give him a few character sheets and I say, can we make a sub? Gets it out in 2 months. And it is beautiful. I sit there and I go, I need an overlay. The overlay is amazing. Creates a TikTok for us. It generates 100 times the results of anything I can do. There is not a thing that he touches creatively that is not magic and works his freaking tail off. He's one of my favorite people on this planet. Everything everybody hopes that he is from videos just is, and more and better. He's one of the finest people I've ever had the opportunity. Everything I could ever want in a partner in a project, and what he produced as a book. This is
now a Kurt Stan account.
is incredible.
Look at that face. Take these compliments.
Okay, so Josh just over here trying to make me blush.
It's the truth. I love that. And you know, you got to know when somebody is. I'm gonna get a little better than you. Sorry.
It's okay. Hey, it's literally about playing. It's about playing to your strengths. And the beautiful part of it too, and what we've also kind of discovered in like venturing into the space and making this podcast, is that as much as it is a collaborative game, the community itself is extremely collaborative, and there are people like cheering on what you're doing, people that are willing to help you. I'm fortunate enough that me and Mariah work so well together, and we genuinely, same thing. Like there are things that I'm really good at and that Mariah is not, and then vice versa.
We complement each other well. And we have skills and experience in common, but then we have points where
I know that I can't touch are good what at Mariah can do
that the other is not. And so it's really nice.
Yeah. And it's nice to have that. And even people outside of our co-working relationship that we've met that want to collaborate with us and work on other projects and stuff. It's nice to it's hard as controlling people to let go of that. But then there's a point where you have to be like, this will never become what I want it to be until I learn to trust in the people that I've brought in and know that they can do things more efficiently and better than I can. And we only grow by helping each other in that way.
I had the conversation early on in the book, obviously wanted to change some things in my system. And he was kind of dancing around the issue a little bit, like trying to parry about my feelings. And I looked at him and I go, dude, you kill whatever you got to kill in it. You change whatever you got to change. If I didn't think you could do this, I wouldn't be in this bit. I go, I'm going to tell you something. If I say I'm going to do something, it freaking gets done. That's a fact. Mm-hmm. I don't care what it takes. I'll lose myself before I lose the game on something I say I'm going to do. Whatever you do, whatever you got to do. Because the death to success is ego. It just is. And that's something I learned a long time ago, is I know where my, and for me, when it comes to this project, it's mostly been on my shoulders for 10 years from Kurt and Laura and another guy named Sean, who've kind of come in and started to take on some active roles. Having that taken off of me and having people who are just so talented doing things that I'm not good at is so freaking good.
It's nice.
It feels so good. It's not, I had no problem giving up that. I could, you know, on the other side of the line, I could even hear in his voice a little bit of surprise, because I know for creative people, a lot of time it is, as a person who is a creative person, I know that other people are more like that. Dude, take it. It's yours, man. There's no way to success except for doing that.
It's a big act of trust, but it is also like we've had the same deal with like when we brought on our editor and stuff, because we got by on a lot of it from Queer Audacity. And just being like, I'm just gonna fucking figure it out.
Yeah.
I do pride myself in that skill set of like, there are so many things that I've never done once in my life. And as soon as I touch it, I'm like, I will die before this comes
pretty
out
much.
Bad.
Yeah. It's like, I can probably figure it out.
But
give me a couple
knowing days. That like editing and sound and all that stuff was starting to become a huge headache for us. And we had to like, we don't have the other skill sets to know the workarounds. And then bringing in Kay, and I know she's listening to this and probably squeeing because we keep shouting out our editor, but bringing her in was like the best decision that we could do, because that lifted so much off of the both of us so that we can start growing this in other ways, like starting a Patreon, starting a Discord server, so that it can going. And eventually like, you only have so much bandwidth. Carrying that weight on your shoulders for 10 years, can't even imagine. But like at some point you're like, I can't do it all, and if I want this,
can't have every skill. And like, I mean, it would be dope if
my ego says I can, but I need to be realistic.
Or it's like you can try, but it won't be as good as if you start, give it to
starts
someone
to go at 40. At 40 it gets a lot easier.
That's not for me.
You're like, just do it. I'm good.
40, you know, I just say, take you know, it. At whatever, once you're at 40, you're on your way out. You just are. Like, life only goes about 80 years, about how long you got. I'm 44. Life instantly looks a lot different on the way out than on the way in.
My warranty's expiring.
I can remember. I can remember when I probably would have fought a little bit more for stuff like what I was with him. But he was like, "Can we just? I mean, I'm thinking about changing this thing." I was like, "Do it, dude. Fuck that thing. Whatever it is that you don't like,
run
fuck
with
it, and you do what you want to do."
Yeah. There's also a very good, like, it's kind of the kill your darlings thing, right? Where it's like, it's important to have that level of openness with your own creations and not be so attached to things you create that you can't see the flaw in them, regardless of, like, that's really important. Because if you, like, yes, there are things you make, but you can't pour so much of yourself into everything you make.
Kill your darlings is one of my favorite phrases as a writer. It's one of the things I heard really early on. I come from a theater background, so and a lot of my background is in collaborative theater, like ensemble-based theater and theater, devised theater, where it is just created by the ensemble and doesn't, like, there's not necessarily a script and a narrator that's kind of dictating everything. So the idea of, you know, TTRPGs are sort of a natural fit in that regard. Yeah, you have to be willing, like you said, to just not hold that personally. And I think one of the things Josh, you paid me some compliments. It's my turn to return the favor. One of the things that I think has made this partnership successful from the get-go has been your willingness to just kind of put ego aside completely and trust that I was going to be able to run with things. And just the amount of sheer prep work. I know early on in the process, we talked and we met. I had 20 or so pages of notes on the system that were all of the background work that has been done on it over the years and created by the other players, and just sort of organized it and had a really complete outline. So as far as my ability to do things quickly, a lot of that was kind of done previously by all the players, by yourself over the years, that it just sort of was able to sit down and, you know, write it all out officially. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of the changes that I did make are only from that kind of perspective. When you kind of look at it from the outside and you have all of it written down all together, you start to see, oh, there's a couple inconsistencies here or there that, you know, help to kind of change it and make consistent for players, especially when we're trying to reach a wider audience than the folks that we have in our Discord.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's looking like it's about that time, but this has been such an amazing conversation. Yeah. And I can't thank you guys enough. One, for donating, two, for coming on and sharing all of this with us. Because it sounds like such an amazing project and career that you found for yourself. And it's genuinely super inspiring. And I love that you've found each other and are creating this amazing thing together. If you want to give us just again a quick outro about y'all and then where people can find you and all these amazing things that you're doing, as well as any exciting projects that you've got coming up that you want to plug away.
Sure. Yeah. My name is Kurt. You can find me everywhere on the internet by the name Mr. Kurtwise. I have links to both the Narrative Universe TTRPG manual and the ORSEC Narrative Universe Discord server posted on my TikTok. Instagram is very finicky about links recently, so they won't let me post them there. But go to my TikTok if you want to find all of that information and links there. I am also on Twitch, streaming currently on Tuesdays. I have a couple of new games that are going to be coming up, including a new Narrative Universe game, some one-shots with some great creators, as well as hopefully a Monster of the Week campaign that's going to be starting. So yeah, follow me on Twitch. Again, Mr. Kurtwise is where I'm at all over the internet. And yeah, thank you both for having us on. This has been a very, very fun talking about games and stuff.
It happens.
And I am Josh Orsak. I'm the project head at the ORSEC Narrative Universe. You can find me, ORSEC Narrative Universe, on almost every social media that there is. The biggest thing is the Discord. It's literally any kind of Discord invite, but instead of like a bunch of numbers, it's just ORSEC Narrative Universe, one word. I would love to play with y'all. Come by and let's play and let's talk about some of the other stuff we talked about too.
100%. Really,
thank you so much. This was amazing.
You threatened us with a good time.
This was amazing. This was awesome. This was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you guys for coming, and thank you all for listening to another episode, and we'll see y'all next time. Bye.
Table Talk is a podcast brought to you by Mythos Media Productions, bringing you a new episode every Wednesday, wherever you get your podcasts. Find us on Instagram and TikTok at TableTalkRPG, or check us out at our website, mythosmediaproductions.godaddysites.com. All business inquiries can reach out to us via email at info@mythosmediaproductions.com.